And good morning. Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Wednesday, April 21st. I'm Sam Fuqua. Ahead this morning, as the Boulder City Council moves closer to a vote on annexation of the property known as CU South, opponents have announced they will fight the issue through the petition process. More coming up. And watch the road. Traffic accidents due to distracted driving are on the rise in Colorado. We'll find out more, including some advice for minimizing distraction. Our regular Wednesday features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars. At 8:30, a BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower. And then at 8:35 this morning, we look back at an important part of the history of the fight against nuclear weapons. KGNU's Elena Claver talks with activists Chet Tejeski and Daniel Ellsberg on the 35th anniversary of the protests at the Nevada nuclear weapons test site. At 9 o'clock, we'll talk about electric vehicles with a sustainable transportation advocate and EV owner. Our day of diverse music begins at 9:30. All that's still coming up, all made possible by the listener members of KGNU. Thank you, members. We begin, as always, with news headlines from Jamie Sudler.
Local leaders reacted to the guilty verdict in the trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin, who was convicted of murdering George Floyd by a Minneapolis jury yesterday. Members of the Colorado Black Caucus of the state legislature said they were still shell-shocked as they gathered for a news conference on Tuesday afternoon. Representative Leslie Herrod, a Democrat from Denver, said they felt the weight of their ancestors, a collective sigh of relief, and a moment of solidarity in the work they are doing. The Denver Post reports that the caucus members were instrumental in developing and passing policing and criminal justice reforms last year in the wake of Floyd's death. In a statement, Colorado Governor Jared Polis said the verdict provided a glimmer of hope and a glimpse of justice. Polis said that while the verdict does not bring back George Floyd, we should acknowledge the victory and use it as an inflection point to bend the arc of social equality toward lasting justice. The parking lot around the state capitol had been cleared by law enforcement by midday yesterday, and there was increased police presence, but almost no one was outside the building as the Black Caucus held their gathering. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock called the verdict the correct one, and Denver City Councilmember Candy Sita Baca said on Twitter that the country just saved itself from an immediate burndown. She tweeted that the short-term win is the verdict, but stay tuned for the fairness of the sentencing and for meaningful change in policing and public safety, adding that the work has just begun. And in Boulder, interim city manager Chris Meskook and police chief Maris Harold issued a joint statement saying that we're coming together today to recognize the pain associated with the murder of George Floyd and that the city has been on a multi-year journey of learning about racial equality and the importance of making changes to address systemic policies and practices that marginalize and harm community members of color. Starting today, people in Colorado can get COVID vaccines without an appointment at multiple locations throughout the state. Now, health experts are working on how to address the hesitancy of some people to get vaccinated. Governor Polis said Tuesday that anyone can get a vaccine without an appointment at several sites around the state, including Ball Arena in Denver, the Colorado State Fairgrounds at Pueblo, and the Ranch Events Complex in Loveland. Polis also said that same-day appointments are available at two other vaccine sites, Dick's Sporting Goods Arena in Commerce City and the Broadmoor World Arena in Colorado Springs. Boulder City Council passed a resolution last night urging passage of state and federal legislation to prevent gun violence. The resolution comes almost exactly a month after 10 people were killed in a mass shooting at the King Soopers grocery store in South Boulder. Prior to the shootings, Boulder had adopted an ordinance that banned assault weapons within city limits. That ordinance was struck down by the courts just days before the Boulder shooting when a judge ruled that the state statute preempts local governments from restricting gun sales and possession. Boulder City Councilman Aaron Brockett read the resolution that urges state and federal leaders to continue efforts to pass legislation to prevent mass shootings.
This includes, first and foremost, a ban on assault weapons. It also includes regulation of short-barreled firearms equipped with pistol braces, a waiting period for firearm purchases of at least 6 days, the addition of a 10-year firearm prohibition for individuals with conviction of or outstanding warrants for violent misdemeanors or crimes that are linked to an increased risk of gun violence, a repeal of the state preemption on local regulation of firearms, universal background checks on all sales of firearms, requirements for a firearm owner to keep his or her firearm in a locked container or secured with a locking device, a requirement for firearms owners to report an unaccounted for firearm, and an increase in the minimum age to purchase and possess firearms.
The City Council also agreed to support an appeal of the March 12th District Court ruling that overturned Boulder's 2018 ordinance banning assault weapons. Most elementary students in the Boulder Valley School District will be starting their day at 7:50 a.m. next year. During a work session, the board heard a revised plan that was 5 minutes later than originally proposed. The Daily Camera reports that district staff members presented the Equal School Day plan after feedback from parents and teachers. A school board vote isn't required, and the changes are expected to go into effect in August. District officials said they considered a variety of changes and scenarios before settling on the current plan. The revisions keep the 7-hour day that will end at 2:50 p.m. A computer system that supports Colorado's marijuana dispensaries went down yesterday, the biggest pot holiday of the year. The Denver Post reports that FlowHub said an outage by a third-party service caused the system to crash. It's unclear how many dispensaries in the state have been affected, and a company's representative was not immediately available for comment. 420, as the informal holiday is called, is the highest-selling day for marijuana at various dispensaries. FlowHub processes more than $3 billion in sales annually for more than 1,000 dispensaries in Colorado and 13 other states, according to its website. In the weather today, snow showers are likely mainly later this afternoon with a high of 38. Tonight, the low will be 28, and tomorrow, snow and rain showers are possible in the morning, then partly sunny with a high of 54. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Twelve minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. The Boulder City Council spent last night discussing key aspects of the CU South annexation. But, as KGNU's Roz Brown reports, earlier in the day, opponents of the annexation announced a petition drive that would allow voters to decide the issue.
It's important to recognize that a lot of community members don't want anything here at all.
That's Boulder City Councilman Adam Swetlick speaking last night about opposition to the proposed CU South annexation project.
We get emails saying that all the time, and I totally understand that. I probably fit in that sort of group of people that doesn't ultimately want to see anything here, but I also understand that there are competing needs in the community, and to work on a good faith basis to try to find the best solution to those competing needs is super important.
The competing needs are many. The city is long overdue in addressing flooding in South Boulder, dramatically illustrated by the 2013 flood that left hundreds of homes damaged after South Boulder Creek flooded neighborhoods. To complete flood mitigation there, Boulder needs property owned by CU Boulder, property the university bought 25 years ago to build a south campus to be located on what's now open space at the entrance to Boulder on US 36 and Table Mesa. CU would give Boulder the land it needs for flood mitigation, but only if 300 acres is annexed to the city, a deal that would provide the site with sewer and water for the eventual campus. But CU is still vague on what might be built there, if it builds anything at all. Boulder has never annexed such a large parcel without seeing a site plan, and that bothers Tanya Diera.
I have been a South Boulder resident since 1999, and I'm strongly opposed to any development at CU South. I don't think flood mitigation should be coupled with this annexation agreement. Taking as much land as needed for the protection of our residents should be our city's priority. I urge the board to consider Boulder's core values of environmental protection and fiscal responsibility in relation to the annexation agreement.
The CU South annexation has been a topic of discussion for several years, and at one point there was talk of a land swap, with Boulder providing CU with land elsewhere in the city to prevent the housing and academic buildings proposed by CU from being built on open space. Ron DePew, who lives in Martin Acres, still likes that idea.
I've lived in Martin Acres for 38 years. Constructing a full-fledged campus, including housing for 2,300 people, academic buildings, sports stadiums, etc., in a flood zone makes no sense whatsoever. The annexation agreement that is written for CU South needs to be done with a land exchange in which CU gets land at the North Boulder Area 3 Planning Reserve and the city gets the land at CU South. A CU campus at Area 3 will save Boulder millions of dollars in campus area fill dirt and other site improvements totally unrelated to flood protection. Those millions of Boulder tax dollars are needed for improving citywide infrastructure that will benefit city residents as well as provide affordable housing, Boulder traffic mitigation, climate action, and long overdue maintenance on open space lands.
Claudia Thiem admitted she didn't have much skin in the game, but would like to see the issue brought to a close.
I live about as far away from CU South as you can get in the city, so I'm not affected by ongoing flood risks or any spillover impacts of potential development on the site. But I think it's important for the city as a whole to bring this process to a close. We need flood mitigation in the South Boulder Creek watershed, and years of meticulous process have shown annexation to be the most viable path. Meanwhile, other issues and at-risk neighborhoods need attention.
Matt Benjamin echoed that sentiment, even adding a bit of levity to the public comments.
Since the 2013 flood, we have had three presidents, and NASA designed, built, launched, landed the Perseverance rover on Mars, not to mention just yesterday flying a helicopter on the red planet.
But even before City Council took up the CU South issue last night, the groups Plan Boulder and Save South Boulder announced they have launched a petition drive to collect 3,336 valid signatures to place a measure on the November 2021 ballot to require a vote on any future annexation of the CU South property. Both groups say they believe Boulder citizens deserve a vote on the annexation and have until June 4th to collect the signatures on paper ballots. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
8:17 now at KGNU. Distracted driving. Almost every motorist admits to it, and distraction is a leading cause of car accidents. Over 15,000 accidents in 2019 here in Colorado were caused by distracted driving. We spoke with Colorado Department of Transportation Communications Manager Sam Cole.
Distracted drivers are a clear and present danger on our roadways. About 15,000 crashes every year involve a distracted driver. That's about 13% of all the crashes that we see in the state every year.
13% of all crashes. And what percentage of drivers are driving distracted?
Well, we do surveys every year, and about 90% of drivers, believe it or not, or maybe it is believable, say that they have driven distracted in the last week. And I think that's something we all see when we look out our windows, and there's nothing more alarming to be driving down the road and see somebody not looking at where they're driving. What's interesting is, even though everybody basically says they do it, everybody thinks that it's dangerous and wrong to do.
Yeah, and with 90% of people admitting it, and I will admit to it myself, thinking about my own behavior, I know that when you hear that buzz of a text coming in, and it's particularly if it's someone I've been waiting for a reply from, it is hard to resist. So what should I do? Just toss my phone in the back seat, or what do you recommend?
Well, yes. When it comes to phones, we see phones as being one of the top distractions available or present in a vehicle. And as far as that goes, if you just can't put down your phone for 20 or 30 minutes while you drive to your destination, you know, put it in the back seat, put it out of reach, or just plan ahead, you know, go ahead and make that call, send that text before you leave the house. But for a lot of people, it is like an addiction. They hear the beep of the phone rings, and they just want to pick it up. And, you know, life is not going to end if you don't answer that call right away, but your life might end if you're in a crash.
39 fatal accidents in 2019, according to CDOT, caused by distracted driving. Are there other causes? I mean, this is the one that everybody, I think, immediately thinks of, the phone. But are there other causes we should be thinking about to avoid distraction?
Yeah. Well, the phones are the worst distraction because they take your eyes off the road, they take your hands off the wheel, and they take your mind off of what you're doing. So all three distractions are present, but you know, anything that takes your eyes off the road, that could be turning to talk to another person, looking down at your radio, that's a big distraction that can be very dangerous. Talking on the phone, even if you have your eyes on the road, you know, that's a cognitive distraction. You're not focused on what you're doing. You're in a argument with your team or whatever it may be. You're just not being present with the task at hand. And, you know, I tell you, you know, we're all really busy and we'd love to multitask, but that's something that should never be taking place while you're driving.
And it strikes me that parents who drive distracted with their children in the car are modeling behavior for future drivers. Is this part of driver training? It's been a while since my kids went through that.
For sure. It is a part of driving training in the state. All the schools teach the importance of staying off your phone because it actually is a law. If you're under 18, you're not allowed to be on your phone at all. You can't talk on it. You can't text. You can't do anything. You can't touch that phone when you're driving. The law for adults when you're over 18 is you're allowed to use the phone. You're just not allowed to text. So we do have an anti-texting law if you're an adult driver. And as far as ways to break the habit, you know, a lot of people don't know, but they can enable the do not disturb while driving mode on their phone. That's a good way just to send a message to people that you'll call them when you get to your destination. As I mentioned, planning ahead, just like you would if you were going to be drinking and driving, plan ahead, send those texts before you leave the house, or just get that phone out of sight, out of mind, so the temptation isn't there.
That's Sam Cole, Communications Manager for the Colorado Department of Transportation.
Support comes from Boulder Medical Center, with over 80 primary care and specialty doctors serving Boulder County and beyond. Telemedicine appointments are available on a case-by-case basis. More information can be found at bouldermedical.com.
Time for our regular Wednesday morning feature, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The U.S. has seen at least 147 mass shootings in 2021 and 45 last month alone. After decades of failed attempts to make even the most modest gun legislation stick, people are understandably cynical about these latest attempts, and many Republicans are still taking a strong pro-gun stance. Senator Lindsey Graham recently challenged Democrats to pursue Biden's call to enact a ban on assault-style weapons. Quote, "It won't get 50 votes, much less 60," Graham boasted on Fox News Sunday. But the tide may be turning as the NRA is now in bankruptcy and the filibuster may be on the chopping block. Two senators, one Democrat and one Republican, said recently that lawmakers in both parties could support expanded background checks for gun sales amid increasing pressure to enact meaningful gun control measures. Senator Chris Murphy framed the gun debate as a chance for Republicans to prove that they can work with Democrats to pass legislation, avoiding the need to eliminate the Senate filibuster. If 60 senators join forces to approve expanded background checks, Murphy said, that could create an opening to cooperate on other matters. Quote, "Once we convince Republicans that the sky doesn't fall for you politically when you support a reasonable expansion of something like background checks, you can move on," Murphy said. The House's recent gun bill could pass in the Senate if they agree to relax limitations on gun sales between family members, Murphy said. Republican Senator Patrick J. Toomey agreed that Senate Republicans could support expanded background checks on commercial gun sales. Toomey said, quote, "My focus has always been make it more difficult for people that we all agree shouldn't have firearms. Make it more difficult for them to get firearms." The shootings in Atlanta and Boulder prompted Biden to call on Congress to enact common-sense gun reforms, including banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, and closing loopholes on federal background checks. The debate over gun control is now enmeshed in discussions about whether to overhaul the Senate filibuster, which for years has been used by both parties to block or stall legislation. Republican compromise on gun issues could prove the Senate can still function without drastic changes to these rules. Quote, "Republicans have to argue as a means of defending the current rules that the Senate can still work under the 60-vote requirement," Senator Murphy said. "Here's their opportunity, an issue which has 90% support, which doesn't require them to shift their position, their current position, to a Herculean level. If you have thoughts on expanding background checks on guns and closing loopholes, you can contact your senator." This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you, and tell them in our struggle we would not be only.
On the next Alternative Radio, hear Jeffrey Robinson on the South, slavery, and the lost cause. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
tonight at 6 here on KGNU. Cloudy with scattered snow showers possible throughout the day. Temperatures reaching the mid-30s here on the Front Range. Overnight lows in the 20s. Mostly cloudy and warmer tomorrow, with temperatures Thursday forecast to get up into the high 40s. And as we head into the weekend, warmer temperatures ahead. It's 8:25 now at KGNU. Time for our regular Wednesday morning visit from herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and the dandelions are up. And I really hope that these KGNU listeners are hip enough to know that dandelions are our ally. They actually help aerate the soil. So if you have dandelions in your yard, that's a good thing for anything else you're trying to grow. Also, dandelions are one of the first foods for the bees in the springtime. And so by spraying the dandelions, we are making a big mess of our food supply and the environment. So dandelion leaves are best when they are young, before the plant flowers. But after the plant flowers and they become a little more bitter, the bitter flavor is actually really good for your liver and your heart and small intestines. So dandelion greens can be used in a salad, and the dandelion flowers can also be eaten. They are really high in lutein, which is good for our eyes. And I learned that you can even boil the long stems of the dandelion in water for a couple minutes and then saute them with a little bit of garlic and olive oil or coconut oil or butter or whatever you choose. So dandelions are so hardy. And I think that in this crisis time that we're in, we should be looking at things that make us hardy and adaptable. And we can certainly observe that dandelions adapt to stress. They survive all kinds of environmental affronts. I mean, if you mow a dandelion down, it'll just come back, just shorter next time. If you dig it up, as long as a little bit of the root is left in the ground, it'll come back. They've even tried giving dandelions 20,000 volts of electricity, and it still comes back. So this is an amazingly hardy plant. We know that the ancestors of North America, some of the ancestors, brought dandelions here deliberately and put fences around them. The dandelion root is also edible. You can dig up the root. I usually do this in the fall after the frost, scrub it, slice it diagonally, and either saute it with some garlic and oil or marinate it and put it in the dehydrator. And then the root can get roasted, and it makes a good coffee-tasting beverage. So I really hope that we just wake up and stop hiring companies to spray dandelions, a plant that is so useful for so many pollinators and useful for us too. Our livers need the help that dandelions can give us. The leaves are diuretic. The root helps to detoxify the kidneys and liver. So dandelions really are one of the top five most nutritious vegetables on the face of the earth. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Support comes from Sustainable Resilient Longmont, presenting the Longmont Earth Day celebration on Saturday, April 24th. With activities throughout the day, featuring the Youth and Teen Earth Day program, as well as a climate equity panel taking place in the evening. Itinerary of activities and more information can be found at srlongmont.org.